From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you later this hour. And next hour, a health freedom fighter says the medical and dental establishments are preventing and punishing innovation and attacking alternative medicine. So get ready for that Coast to Coast ride. Next time you use your credit card, think of this story. The percentage of credit card payments that were past due shot up for a record high in the second quarter as surging gasoline prices strained budgets and made it difficult for some of you to pay your bills. The American Bankers Association says the seasonally adjusted percentage of credit card accounts 30 days or more past due rose in the April to June quarter. That followed a delinquency rate of 4.76% in the first quarter and was the highest since the association began collecting this information in 1973. The rise in gas prices is really stretching budgets to the breaking point for some people. According to the association's chief economist, Jim Chesson, gas prices are taking huge chunks out of wallets, leaving some people with little left to meet their financial obligations. And the Arctic ice is disappearing fast, as we've been reporting for the last year or so. September 2005 will set a new record minimum in the amount of Arctic sea ice cover, according to Mark Cerise of the National Snow and Ice Data Center in Boulder, Colorado. He says it's the least sea ice we've seen in the satellite record and continues a pattern of extreme low extents of sea ice, which we've now seen for the last 4 years. September is the month when the Arctic ice usually reaches a minimum. The new data shows that on September 19th, the area covered by ice fell to 2 million square miles, the lowest recorded area since 1978 when satellite records became available. It is now 20% less than the 1978 to 2000 average. What's the big problem with all this? Well, they say this means we will have warmer oceans. And then look what's happening with the hurricanes and everything else. Well, former FEMA director Michael Brown was warned weeks before Hurricane Katrina hit that his agency's backlogged computer systems could delay supplies and put personnel at risk during an emergency. Now, this is according to an audit, an internal review of FEMA's information sharing system, shows it was overwhelmed during the 2004 hurricane season. The audit was released a day after Brown vehemently defended FEMA for the government's dismal response to Katrina, instead blaming state and local officials for poor planning and chaos during the August 29th storm and subsequent flooding. The review by Homeland Security Department Acting Inspector General Richard L. Skinner examined FEMA's response to four major hurricanes and a tropical storm that hit Florida and the Gulf Coast in August and September of last year. It noted FEMA's mission during disasters as rapid response and coordinating efforts among federal, state, and local authorities. However, they went on to say, FEMA's systems do not support effective or efficient coordination of deployment operations because there's no sharing of information. This created operational inefficiencies and hindered the delivery of essential disaster response and recovery services. Well, he's been on television all day. Representative Tom DeLay, Republican out of Texas, says that he would temporarily step down as House Majority Leader after he and two political associates were charged by a Texas grand jury with conspiracy in a campaign finance scheme. DeLay appeared before reporters after the charges were released. He said he has done nothing wrong, violated no law, no regulation, no rule of the House. He called the indictment baseless and a sham and said he will prove his innocence based on the facts and the law. DeLay also accused Travis County District Attorney Ronnie Earle, who is leading the investigation, of pursuing the case for political motives. Earlier, DeLay Attorney Bill White told reporters, "It's a skunky indictment, if they have one." The indictment charges that DeLay, 58-year-old, conspired to have corporate contributions funneled through his political action committee to help Republican state candidates. The $155,000 in funds from companies, including Sears Roebuck, was allegedly handed over from the PAC in a $190,000 check to the Republican National Committee, which was also given a list of Texas State House candidates and the sums that they were to receive. The indictment included a copy of the check. Now, while all this was going on, nobody pointed out also that a Congressional Ethics Committee has reprimanded Mr. DeLay three times for what it calls objectionable behavior, including foreign trips financed irregularly. President George W. Bush has warned that insurgents in Iraq will step up their attacks ahead of next month's referendum on a new constitution. But he said both U.S. and Iraqi forces were ready to meet the threat. Mr. Bush, facing difficult times with record low approval ratings and opinion polls showing a majority of Americans now no longer support the war in Iraq. His comments came on the day eight people were killed in the first attack in Iraq by a female suicide bomber. She pushed her way into a crowd at an army recruitment center in northern Iraq. U.S. intelligence officials and counterterrorism analysts are questioning whether a slain terrorist described by President Bush as the second most wanted al-Qaeda leader in Iraq was as significant as a figure as the Bush administration is claiming. In a brief Rose Garden appearance Wednesday, Mr. Bush seized on the killing of Abu Azzam by joint U.S.-Iraqi forces in a shootout last Sunday as fresh evidence that the United States is turning the tide against the Iraqi insurgency. But a veteran counterterrorism analyst says there are ample reasons to question whether Abu Azzam was really the number two figure in the Iraqi insurgency. He noted that U.S. officials have made similar claims about a string of purportedly high-ranking terrorist operatives who've been captured or killed in the past. He simply says, if I had a nickel for every number two and number three they've arrested or killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, I'd be a millionaire by now. Get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, if you would. Look at the feature story. A double-headed baby tortoise from Cuba. A picture is worth a thousand words. I'm not going to say anything. Go look at it. Remarkable picture. And people in Puerto Rico are so sure that they've been receiving otherworldly visitors that they now want to build a UFO landing strip to welcome them. A bright green sign along a lonely country road in southwestern Puerto Rico proudly displays a silhouette of a flying saucer and two words, extraterrestrial route. Most Puerto Ricans laughed when a horse farmer installed the sign on his property, but they're not laughing anymore. This 39-year-old is not going to be ignored, has the blessing of the mayor out that way, and they're going to allow him to build a UFO landing strip. We'll see if the extraterrestrials land there. And the space shuttle, an international space station, nearly the whole of the U.S. manned space program for the past three decades, apparently were mistakes, according to NASA's chief Michael Griffin. In a meeting with USA Today's editorial board, Griffin said NASA lost its way in the 70s when the agency ended the Apollo moon missions in favor of developing the shuttle and space station, which can only orbit Earth. It is now commonly accepted this was not the right path. In a moment, reaction from Coast to Coast AM science advisor Richard C. Hoagland, who heads up the enterprisemission.com, will get his reaction to Michael Griffin's statement on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you know, the shuttle has cost the lives of 14 astronauts since the first flight in 1982. Richard C. Hoagland, was the shuttle mission well worth it, or do you think, as Michael Griffin is saying, it was a mistake?
You know, the more I listen to Mike Griffin, the more I got to say, I think we've got an administrator, the first one since Jack Webb, who is James Webb, who is worthy of the name.
I'm telling you, I think he's reading your blogs on the enterprisemission.com. Let me tell you something. When I was talking about you'd be a great appointee for that position because of your knowledge, not only of space, but also, you know, you're a good public speaker. You're a booster for that program. I'm telling you, I don't think they could have found a guy who was closer to you in terms of ideas than Michael Griffin.
You know what's remarkable? I mean, we're watching things going on in Washington. You reported about Tom DeLay, you know, other problems. You know, there was a guy at OMB, apparently, who was arrested by the FBI for some, you know, financial problems with the National Treasury. Here's a guy, Mike Griffin, who is telling the truth. And what's astonishing is to hear people in NASA and contractors reacting. Let me read you a couple of comments from the NASA Watch website, which is kind of a watchdog agency like we are looking at NASA. It's not connected with NASA, but it's run by some former NASA employees. This one: I was angered by the comments made to USA Today by NASA Administrator Michael Griffin, stating the space shuttle program had been a mistake, misguided, and not the right path. I've invested my career in the shuttle program for 10 years, and I have many coworkers who have given their life to it for 20 years and more. His statements have brushed aside the careers of thousands of dedicated men and women as though we were all misguided. I worked with the Columbia crew for 3 years and do not believe these fine men and women gave their lives for a program that was misguided or a mistake. Now, that's the, you know, if you're in a box canyon and there are walls on all sides and you see no way out, you keep going further down the canyon. And what this guy, who's now leading NASA in a totally different, interesting direction, mainly back to the moon and on to Mars, is saying is, if we had spent the $150 billion we spent on the shuttle since its inception, and the $100 billion that we're going to spend on the space station to its completion, we would be on Mars by now.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And he's telling us that. He is basically saying we should have continued these missions to the moon and onward and forgotten about the other thing. I will say, though, that the one thing the shuttle has done, and that's the continual repairs to the Hubble. That was worthwhile. How could they have done that, Richard, without the shuttle?
Well, you would have designed a spaceship that would have been different and robotic and designed to take up new hardware and attach it to the shuttle through robotic means.
I see.
If we had put the money into robotics, you know, alongside manned missions to back to the moon and onto Mars, which is what they're planning to do now. Remember, the president's vision envisions a partnership between robotics and human systems, which is what it should have been all along. I mean, this idea that these two programs were ever at loggerheads is just dumb. When I hear people say, which they've said to me over and over again, well, JPL doesn't want to go to Mars with, you know, men because it would mean there'd be no more robotic missions. These are people that have no sense of history, George, because it was because of the manned missions, because of Apollo, that JPL got the Surveyor program, the Ranger program, the Lunar Orbiter program came into NASA. All the robotic missions to the moon came along as freight because of the need to verify the safety of the landing sites and to do reconnaissance for the manned mission to follow, namely the Apollo program.
You know, he also went on to say that the International Space Station wasn't worth it. That was a mistake, saying that the expense, the risk, and the difficulty of flying humans to space is not worth it.
Well, he says to fly into space to go nowhere. Remember, we've been going around and around and around at the edge of the vast ocean, the new ocean, as Kennedy calls space, and we've gone nowhere. And the amount of science that the space station is doing is nothing. It's a make-work project. And we're stuck now with our international partners, which is why we have to finish the damn thing, because we've got how many nations that are part of that coalition that we have committed to, which is their only access to space.
True.
So it almost reminds me of the same reason why people who claim that we should never have gone to Iraq because all the reasons were wrong, no WMD, no this, no that, claim now that we should stay there because we're already there. To stay with the space station because we're already there, and to, as one wag said, you know, piss more money down the rat hole, just doesn't make any sense. And what I find so refreshing in a town where everybody says what everybody wants to hear, Mike Griffin said to the editorial board of the Washington Post last week and the and USA this week that basically this was a dumb thing to do, and we should have gone on with Apollo. And we're now getting on with the president's vision to go to the moon again and then on to Mars. And remember how I've talked again and again on this program how it's like the space program had been put on hold?
Yep.
Like we put the pause button on the VCR. Mike Griffin has now hit the pause button again, and the program is resuming pursuant to President Bush's vision. And I must tell you, George, I sit here looking at all the problems we have. the problems overseas, the domestic problems, the enormous budgets for the hurricane disasters, all of the other things that we talk about on the show. And I say to myself, why do we have a program at all to go to the moon and on to Mars? And tonight I'm asking, why do we have a guy in charge of it who seems to insist on telling us the truth? What an astonishing development to be able to say.
It sure is. Hey, the Chinese have announced that in October they're sending up two of their Tychonauts or whatever they're called. Okay.
Yep.
Now, this is an interesting situation. We've already been to the moon. We've beaten everybody. However, to me, this now sounds like a modern race to get back to the moon. Will people look at us, if the Chinese get there before we do in this new era, will people basically say they beat us in this push?
Well, remember, what we say is waiting there for us to claim. All the technology, all the ruins, all the libraries, all that extraordinary history embodied in the artifacts that we have from the Apollo missions, from those photographs, absolute proof really exists. If you, you know, bring it before anybody who's kind of neutral and objective. And the question I have in my mind is, are we really putting the pedal to the metal to accelerate the moon program because we're concerned that the Chinese will get there and get their hands on the goodies first?
Now, we're still pursuing, by the way, getting Mike Griffin on as a guest on Coast to Coast, if not for the entire program with us, Richard, maybe the first hour. And NASA is still reviewing that. So they haven't said no. And I think the more he's doing this, and the more really positive aspects of a new space program, I think he's going to do it.
Wouldn't it be astonishing if this administrator were to sit down and have a conversation with you and me and, you know, the rest of America, and be able to discuss as rational human beings some extraordinary things that are out there waiting for NASA to, quote, find? I mean, we could really make some history, and I'm telling you, it is so interesting to see a guy in Washington who looks into the camera and basically says, this is what I believe, what? Regardless of whose, you know, ox would be gored.
Wouldn't it be astonishing if he put you in charge of the manned Mars mission?
Well, that may be a long day coming.
He'll say, weren't you the guy who talked about the face on Mars? And you'll say, yeah. And he'll say, Richard, I got this new resolution camera. You're going to love it. You might be able to talk him into doing that.
If we get a conversation, we might be able to actually bring some things to his attention that he doesn't know about. And that's, of course, the role of this program. Now, before we leave tonight, let me ask you one thing.
Yeah.
Have you been following our blog?
I have. As a matter of fact, I saw the last Katrina entry dated 9/26.
We are working on a new one that I'm hoping to post tonight that will blow your socks off. We have some really remarkable evidence that someone in the government has been operating a black ops campaign, a program to, if not control hurricanes, at least steer them. And we're going to be presenting that in the next few hours at the Enterprise
All
Mission.
All right, well, we'll let you have your day. And as you know, we are working on getting Colonel Tom Bearden on the program, too. So that's
very possible. Oh, I would love to hear you talk to him.
Okay, Richard, thanks so much. EnterpriseMission.com, that's the website, that's the blog. And just go and pop. And by the way, thanks again for the Godman ET DVD series. In you know, whatever amount you're selling, less those expenses and some other things that you're helping on the hurricane victims.
We're definitely
everybody
giving
appreciates
contributions
that.
To Rita and Katrina victims. Yes.
Absolutely. Well, you take care of yourself.
You too.
All right. That's Richard C. Hoagland. Now, when we come back, we're going to have full open lines for you for the rest of the hour. What's left of it? Here are the phone numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. The wild card line is open for you now at 818-501-4109. You might want to get yourself a head start now before those lines get all jammed up. You heard some of the stories of the day. If you want to react to some of those, or some other things that are out there. And what do you think of that Puerto Rico story, that they're actually building a real UFO landing strip? You know, that's where the Arecibo telescope is, that huge radio telescope, the one that was in all those great movies, Contact and things like that. You know what? Maybe Puerto Rico is indeed a hub alley for UFOs. So maybe building a landing strip for them is not a bad idea. with all those trees and things, they probably need a spot to land. Anyway, I'll be back in a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, in about 30 more clicks on the clock, our guest will be Tim Bullen. We'll be talking to him. He's a consumer advocate, health freedom fighter, and he claims that we're getting the short end of the stick, and we'll explain why in just about 30 minutes right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, find out about the forces of the dark side on the classic Art Bell interview with the late Father Malachi Martin entitled Perfect Possession. It's available free to After Dark subscribers or those who renew. Just start your subscription with the October Creatures of the Night issue, and the CD will be shipped to you. Call right now at 1-888-727-5505 or go online, coasttocoastam.com. A couple nights ago, I ran a Russian girl exorcism, about 22 seconds worth. Friday, I will run about 2 minutes and 40 seconds worth. I want you to take a better listen to that because it truly gets spookier. That'll be Friday night. First time caller line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from? Hi.
Hello, this is David in Tennessee, George.
Hi, David.
I'm a law enforcement officer in Tennessee, and a couple of years ago, we had received a 911 call about a vehicle that had flipped over into a ditch. And the caller was very nonspecific about where the vehicle was located, so we'd had some trouble. And we were driving up and down a county road aimlessly, lights and sirens on, not being able to find this. And I had driven past this one road twice, and I was coming up on it again. And there was a girl standing at the end of the road. She was motioning me towards the road.
Okay.
And that's where I made my turn. I could see, just from where I had made the turn, I could see the taillights in the ditch. And we had made it out that way. And we had to call the fire department to get her out of the car. And, of course, she was dead by the time we got her into the ambulance and everything. And what was really eerie about it is that she, the woman in the car, was wearing the same outfit as the girl that had gestured me to the road. And I'm in the car right now, but I'd really love to call you back sometime and play the 911 call for you.
Oh, I'd love to hear that, David.
I find it very eerily reminiscent because not only do I believe that she gestured us towards the car, I believe that she was the 911 caller.
Now, maybe for a split second, you know, she was trying to save herself spirit-wise and somehow disconnected from her body. And I'm sure when you finally came back up and looked around, whoever that was who waved you in was gone, right?
Absolutely. We could not find her. And I do believe that it was her spirit, and I do believe that somehow or another that the 911 call was made from her.
So
we never did find a cell phone in her car.
So the 911 call was a woman?
The 911 call was a woman.
And
it is very eerily reminiscent because she didn't give specific details. She wouldn't tell the dispatcher her name. And she basically told us where the car was, but she didn't have a very good idea of where it was located and the distress level in her voice. We actually, the parents had listened to the 911 call later, and they said that it sounded like their daughter.
Oh, that's incredible.
Very eerily reminiscent of the call.
I would
play it for you.
I would love to hear that the next time you get a break to be able to do that. As a matter of fact, can I put you on hold and you and Tom can share either email information or phone information? Is that okay?
I can give him email information. That's fine.
Okay, absolutely. Go ahead, Tom. Take it away, and you and David work it out where we get this 911 call. Boy, that is eerie. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah.
My name is Dick.
Hi, Dick.
And you had asked a question 3 or 4 or 5 days ago about wishing that there was a car that would use no gasoline.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Now, Art Bell has already had this gentleman on the air some time back. His name is Robert Cook. He has patented and developed a reactionless drive. It would be, imagine driving a car with this kind of a drive. There would be no need for a transmission, no need for a drivetrain or a rear end, and no brakes. you would operate this automobile anywhere on any surface, ice, you would go just like normal.
Now, that was a long time ago. Why hasn't Cook been able to bring this to market?
Well, Chrysler came to him, wanted to buy the patent.
Okay.
And during the course of the negotiations, he asked, now you're going to build this. They said, no, we're going to shelve it. And he walked out. Now, I hear that Ford Motor Company, there's a possible, they haven't said anything yet, but there was an article in the paper about 3 days ago that said that they have a project that they are starting on and that it's going to be highly controversial. Now, I just wonder if he didn't go to Ford.
That's a good, well, I tell you what, we'll check back with him and see what's going on with it.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
Yeah, I know it has, but it's still in process, and there's no question that he's working on it.
All right, appreciate your call. We'll do that. Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to the program. Hi.
Hi. Good evening, George.
Hi there.
I'd like to find out. I'm glad you had Richard Hoagland on tonight, and possibly he'd be interested in what I'm about to say.
All right.
Sunday night at 9 o'clock, the Discovery Science Channel had a special on the Apollo program, and they were discussing the various problems they had that most people weren't aware of, and Buzz Aldrin came on and said that they were followed by an unknown object to a good part of the way to the moon. They didn't want to mention it on the air because of people were monitoring the radio, and apparently they had been instructed not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had some photographs that they had taken through the window. I'm not sure if these are the ones he took or a similar mission. But he said that he contacted Mission Control, asked them if where the final stage was, that would be the S-4B was, because he thought it might be that one, although they didn't think it would be that close. Mission Patrol reported that it was over 6,000 miles away. So it's unlikely that they saw that. And after Buzz reported that, another NASA personnel came on and said that they were not to report material of that nature because there had been a number of other sightings on other missions. So I just wonder if you've been aware of that, but that went out on Discovery Science at 9 o'clock on Sunday night.
I'm aware of some of those comments. I'm not aware of that specific Discovery program, but do let me ask you, was Buzz Aldrin on that show, or were they merely trying to quote him?
No, he was on the
okay.
show and made the statements.
All right. That's good to know that.
Okay, thank
all right,
you.
Thanks. Appreciate that. I have guessed all along that astronauts have been followed by some kind of craft. I mean, yeah, some of the things, the transmissions. What was the one? Was it the Apollo 13 that talked about that? Or was it Apollo 12? One of those that talked about Santa Claus is here. There is a Santa Claus. And I don't think they were talking about jolly old St. Nick. West of the Rockies, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. I was originally calling about the Amtrak train that has derailed the passenger train in St. Louis. I can't get any details on any of these cable channels or anywhere, and I want to have details about things like that, because I agree with you that when terrorists come back here, they're going to come to the Midwest somewhere, and it's Atlanta or Chicago or St. Louis, and I just, every time I hear a train derailing, it seems to get under my skin. But anyway, that man from Tennessee that called a few minutes ago, that was like that story you told last night about they opened up the door, and the man that opened the door was
what was the guy who had already died.
Yeah, and that was just eerie to me because I thought about that several times today. What you had told me.
Those stories, they don't scare me, but
no,
they really make the hair on my arms pop up.
Well, it makes me so aware of what's around me, and I like he said, the girl was pointing down to where the car was, and I think that she was helping him find what he was looking for. You know, just because she knew where he had to go, and I feel the spirits around me are trying to help me not be so lost sometimes.
I agree. Hey, thanks.
Hey, thanks, George. If you can get any information about that.
Yeah, I know. It just happened, and I don't even know if there are any injuries or not. Have you heard anything?
That's all I heard in DeSoto outside St. Louis.
Yeah, DeSoto's about 40 miles or so.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate your call. Next up, let's move to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You are on the air. Hi there.
Hey.
Yeah.
George, what's going on?
Hi.
Anyway, I prefer not to give my name and my whereabouts, but...
Oh, why? There's got to be a reason, I guess.
Well, I'm the walrus, George.
Oh, yeah? I thought that was Paul.
No, it's not. It's me.
Okay.
I'm being serious, George.
All right, tell me a little bit. What's going on?
Okay, the song Come Together.
Yeah.
You know, people think it doesn't mean anything, but it's given clues. It gives clues it has through the universal consciousness, and it's talking about me.
And, oh, so you're serious?
Yeah, I'm serious.
The Beatles song where they went on the walrus was Paul.
Matter of fact, there's other songs that talk about me.
They're talking about you.
Yeah, I know you don't believe
All right, how old would you have been then?
Well, I mean...
Just a kid, right?
Well, yeah, when it first came out,
Well, did you know the Beatles, or how did they know?
Oh, no, come on. No, this is a spiritual thing.
Oh, okay. All right, now I'm hearing you. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So they didn't know you, but they were doing, their song was based on
something. They didn't know what they were doing.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that this is the way it is.
So what are some of the things you do spiritually?
Well, I'm a musician, and I pray a lot. That's really my job, I guess.
Is it a holy roller. Is it working?
Yeah, it's working.
All right, well, we got to go back and listen to that song again, The Walrus Was Paul, and try to figure out who you are. I bet we'll find out. Next up, first-time caller line, your turn. Hi.
Hey, this is Mark from St. George.
Now,
Mark, go ahead.
First-time caller, St. George, though, where?
St. George, Utah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been listening for about 7 years, first-time call, and I'm a truck drive between St. George and Las Vegas. My horn.
There you are. You're obviously now driving, or sound like you're on the side of the road.
Actually, yeah, I just pulled over. I decided to pull over, and just so I didn't lose cell phone reception.
But... I was able to remote view that, by the way.
Well, I just, a lot of people don't know this, but it's about 2012. And if you take the Book of Mormon, I'm a Mormon.
Okay.
If you take the Book of Mormon and you take the wars in the United States from World War I, World War II, and onward with all of our little wars and all of our major wars, and you take the wars between the Book of Mormon people, the Nephites and the Lamanites, they all coincide with one another from 2012. And you can take it all the way up to the first coming of Christ. And with the correlation between the Book of Mormon wars and the wars in the United States, or that the United States has been involved in, the second coming of Christ would come up to the year 2012.
So you think around 2012, the second coming of Christ is going to occur?
I don't know. Maybe not. But I just thought that was pretty interesting. And the other thing that
anything could happen, I guess.
The other thing I thought was really interesting is in the book of Daniel, in the Old Testament, and in, the 28th chapter of Matthew, it talks about the tribulation time being 7 years before the coming of Christ.
Well, that means we're right in it, right? It's just starting.
Here comes the tribulation.
Hey, let me ask you a question, by the way, because you are a Mormon. Mormons believe in extraterrestrials, don't they?
Actually, if you go to the book of Moses and the book of Abraham, Moses is actually taken up by our Heavenly Father, and he's shown that there are many Earths and that there are many worlds and many creations of Christ. And Joseph Smith taught that Jesus Christ is the God of this galaxy and that he had a father. And he's the God of another galaxy, and so on and so forth. And it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. Well, and let me tell you what's really fascinating about that is the fact that all these various religions, yours included, all have similar and different stories. But the similar ones are the ones that really get me, because that tells me for all these different facets of beliefs, to believe in some of the same things, something's going on, and something must be real. West of the Rockies, you're up. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Is this George?
It is.
Hi, George. This is Sandy from L.A., formerly of Fitchburg, Massachusetts.
Oh, you're kidding. My mom's town.
Yeah, I know. I hear. I listen to you all the time.
Small world.
Yeah.
You remember the big rock there?
Of course I do.
Well,
right in the center as you go back around.
Two blocks up.
Oh, my
Two blocks
gosh.
Up was where My parents, my mother's father owned a place called the Union Furniture Store.
Oh, you're kidding.
That's their place.
The
and
Union
then,
Furniture Store, I know it well.
Then the little apartments above that, that's where we used to stay as, when I was a kid, every summer for years, right there. And then right across, right across the street, because
yeah,
that's Main Street, is that is the Nashua River, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
That's
small
today's,
world.
Today's geography lesson in Fitchburg, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Listen, I called about your Puerto Rico comment.
Yeah.
Well, I lived in Puerto Rico for about 6 years. I got back about 1995. And during that time, I lived in a little town in the southwestern corner called Adjuntas.
Adjuntas.
Adjuntas, Puerto Rico. It was the poorest town in the entire island. And I lived way, way, way in the mountains. I was a coffee grower. Now, up in Adjuntas, we had, for quite some period of time, the first year or two I was there, all these stories in the local paper about, they call them OVNIs, which are UFOs.
Hmm.
Because we had a private landing strip also in the town of Adjuntas.
For them?
So,
for the UFOs?
Well, actually, it was just a private landing strip for some of the more affluent coffee drinkers coffee plantation people.
Okay.
But it got so frequently, the sightings, I saw one myself.
What did it look like?
Well, it was round. It had the lights, you know, that kind of like go by, like it's whirling. It was silent, and it moved from left to right very rapidly.
You couldn't see any occupants, could you?
No, because this was high one night.
All right.
But the point of my call is, it got so used to seeing them in that area that they went up to the top of this mountain every night, on especially in the weekends. You drive up, you couldn't get a space because people were up there in their cars waiting to see them.
That's amazing. Yeah, something's going on in Puerto Rico.
So for the longest time, it was kind of a town that was known for its OVNI sightings. So when you said southwestern, which is like on the way to Arecibo, which is where, in fact, my ex-sister-in-law lives in Arecibo. She's a teacher. And I was thinking there might be a connection.
So that would not surprise you if
it
UFOs landed out there.
In the least.
All right. I don't blame you. Hey, thanks for the call. And
thank you.
Thanks for the Fitchburg
talk. Listen, I've listened to you for years.
All right. Appreciate it.
I love you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Well, in just a moment, Tim Boland joins us. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're going to talk not only about alternative medicine, but his thoughts on just why big medicine seems to be putting alternative practitioners down and doing everything they can to keep them down. If you need to email me, though, again, george@coasttocoastam.com. It is simply that simple. So I shall be right back. The rest of you on hold. Well, I'll try to get you during our next open lines, which will probably be, if not later, tomorrow night, definitely Friday. We'll be back.